Hello, and welcome to episode 145 of Speak Beastie for February 20th, 2022. I'm Jeff.
I'm Marjolaine. And today we have a very special guest, Joshua Shea. Welcome, Joshua.
Hello, everyone.
I love the way his name, he has a cool sounding name, but I love it when with your accent, it makes it just, it all flows together almost as if it's one word.
Thank you. Yeah. I love the variety of accents that we have on the interview today. It's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that, but we have each a different one.
Exactly.
It's
yeah.
Very nice.
Actually, it sounds like the last film because we were in France, in the States, in the UK. So yeah, perfect representation of Crimes of Grindelwald.
Exactly, yeah.
And speaking of the last film, one of us was actually there.
I was indeed, yeah. Yes, I was. I had a great time being part of that project and excited to see where it goes next. I think it's a really exciting series. And it's not long. We don't have to wait long now until the next film.
Finally.
Oh, hopefully not. Not for as long as we've had to wait already. We should have probably had it.
I hope so.
So for anybody who is not familiar, our special guest today, Joshua Shea, portrayed the role of young Newt Scamander in Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. We are very excited to get a chance to talk to him today.
Yeah, first time, of course, that we got a real Newt in our show, so that's really exciting.
Yes, yeah, one of two.
Yeah.
I like to say I'm one half of the Newt, but I'm not quite sure if that's right. I think he's got more than me.
Well, you know, you were playing a wizard, and wizards, they don't teach math in their schools.
Exactly. So I claim a small portion.
Well, we're absolutely excited to have you with us today, Josh.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to chat to you guys.
We're also excited, before we get started with our interview, to thank our episode sponsor for today. This episode is sponsored by our Speak Beastie Patreon supporter, Margie. So thank you so much to Margie for your support of our show and for sponsoring this episode.
Thank you, Margie.
Claps for Margie.
Yay.
Oh yeah, Margie.
Watch, she's going to hear you say her name and she's going to be absolutely thrilled.
Yes. Thank you, Margie.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
So before we get to our interview with Joshua, we do have a little bit of news to talk about today. And just so nobody gets worried, Joshua's still here. We just had to go ahead and get the interview on the books to make sure that that was all taken care of. And now we're going to actually go back and record the news so that it's more relevant to closer to the release of the episode.
Yes.
So first up on our Phoenix Register, you may have heard about this one, but just in case you haven't, MuggleNet has received some exclusive leaked photographs confirming that there were scenes filmed for Crimes of Grindelwald. Almost said Secrets of Dumbledore there for a second. But it was for Crimes of Grindelwald, they had filmed scenes with Ariana Dumbledore as a character.
Yeah. Interesting. Flashback, I guess.
That's what people are saying now. People are saying that these scenes are most likely going to be used in Secrets of Dumbledore as a flashback, which is probably what they were going to do with them anyway.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, we have picture of the actress, the very cute actress, by the way, in two different dresses. So implying that maybe two different scenes?
That's possibly. At least one of the dresses looks a bit like the kefta that the Grisha wear on the Shadow and Bone Netflix series, if anybody's seen that.
Yes.
I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I like the style, the 19th century style, but with this typical Colleen Atwood wizarding twist. That's very nice. I like
that she does so well. We are very blessed in a costume designer with Colleen Atwood, for sure.
Yeah, but so what we can suppose is that they filmed that for the previous movie, but at the cutting floor they decided that, okay, this movie is already packed with so much that we need to keep that for later. And I mean, Secrets of Dumbledore in the title, it's the perfect place to have secrets of Dumbledore like Ariana. So
No doubt about that.
So yeah, we can expect to see this cute little face in the next movie.
And hopefully learn her name. Since these are just leaked photos, there's no name, I don't think, being passed around with it. But if she shows up in the film, I think they'll have to credit her, won't they?
I mean, yeah.
So you would hope.
Yeah, but very exciting because we are waiting for so long for this flashback scene. So yeah, that's the most... Yeah, the most big clue that we might have it soon. So, another news coming from the Wizarding World website is that we will finally have the documentary from the BBC called Fantastic Beasts: A Natural History. We don't have a date, but they say that it will come out very soon. And this documentary was first announced early 2020, and because it was linked to the exhibition Fantastic Beasts: The Wonder of Nature that was at the London Natural History Museum. And yeah, so since the exhibition itself got postponed at the end of last year, but the documentary, since in they say that we will see travel around the world, I guess we can assume they had to postpone even more the production of the documentary. So yeah, obviously we will have that very soon, finally, with Stephen Fry hosting the documentary. That is very exciting. And so they say that we will delve into the mythological, including dragons, mermaids, and unicorns, alongside examination of natural world beasts that continue to inspire us, such as velvet monkeys, narwhals, and namatis. So since I saw the exhibition, luckily, I can tell that it sounds like exactly what we see in the exhibition itself. So I'm really excited for the people that didn't have the chance to see the exhibition, to have a glimpse of it in the documentary.
Like me.
Yeah. Most of our listeners,
probably,
I guess.
most of the hosts of the show.
True, yeah.
But I'm all for anything narrated by Stephen Fry. He always does such a great job as a host. And I suppose if he hadn't been available, they might have gone with Jim Dale. But then again, Stephen Fry's got a very strong connection with the BBC, doesn't he?
Yeah. And it's really cool to have this consistent face and voice of Stephen Fry for everything connected to the Wizarding World outside of the movies. That's very nice. And they also said that we will have an interview with J.K. Rowling about her inspiration for the Beast, and also with the visual effects supervisor, Christian Mans, who works on the Fantasy Beast movies. So I'm really hoping that we will have more behind the scenes about the beasts in the Fantastic Beasts movies. That would be really, really nice.
Well, I didn't get to see that exhibition, but I won't be missing this movie.
Yeah.
I will definitely be watching it.
Yeah. And as soon as it comes out, I think we will have to talk about it in the future episodes.
Oh, yes. We'll do a movie night online with the staff, and then we can get together and do a review episode.
Yay.
Yeah. So the next bit of news in our Phoenix Register, the Wizarding World Wands display is coming back to the UK to help celebrate the release of Secrets of Dumbledore, and apparently, based on a vote, it is going to be stopping in Hull, Stoke-on-Trent, Birmingham, and Reading, which I didn't get to vote in this contest, but these are all excellent town names, so well done to everybody who turned up to vote for that.
Yeah, very British names.
Stroke on Tent. That's just fun to say.
Yeah, it sounds like a
wizarding
town. It
makes me want
town.
To have a pen pal in Stroke on Tent just so I can write it on the envelope.
True.
So if anybody in Stroke on Tent would like to be pen pals with a host of Speak Beastie, you know what our social medias are.
Yeah, but that's very exciting to have news about what they will do to the release of the movies, because it reminds us of the movie, because it reminds us that it's so soon. It's a month and a half away, just a few weeks. That's insane.
It's really, I mean, we're going to blink and it's going to be here.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I hope we will have more news about what we'll have in the US or in France to accompany the release of the movie. That would be nice. Or in Germany, because, man, this future movie will take place in Berlin. So I hope Berlin will have a special event.
Hope so.
Yeah. So yeah, exciting things. We got more and more news and more to come, I guess.
Can't wait to see what else comes up for our Phoenix Register between now and the next episode that we've got coming out. But before we get to our interview with Joshua, we've got, I think I see some owls.
Yeah.
Either owls or buzzards. It's getting hard to tell around here.
Yeah,
oh,
I think.
Thank goodness. They're definitely owls.
Yeah, definitely. I see two owls, I think. So for the outpost, we have answers from the last podcast question, and the question was: do you think Yusuf Kama is going to the dark side or playing double agent? So on Facebook, we had an answer from Heather Brown, and she said, "I feel like Kama is one of those who only chooses one side, their own. He's too set on avenging his family and getting answers by any means necessary."
Hmm.
I agree that's what Kama did in the last movie, but I hope in the next one we will have a character development and he would not be focused on vengeance anymore and have other things in his life. But
what I find most interesting about this answer is that the only way for me that it really holds up is if hashtag Leta lives, which, as has been established on this program, I do not believe that. But I would be happy to admit it if I'm wrong. So if Leta lives, then yes, he's probably still set on avenging his family once he realizes she's not dead. But with her gone, and him no longer being bound by the unbreakable vow that he made to his father, I'd like to think that what happens between the time gap of the second movie and the third is that Dumbledore would have kind of helped talk him around to maybe letting go of his anger a little bit and trying to find a more noble cause to live for.
But I think Leta was never the target, because he knew that Leta was not important for her father, so he was really
wasn't
targeting...
she eventually.
He said that he was targeting the son, because that was what was important for the father. And at the end of the movie, we realized that the son was dead from the beginning. So he was never bound to the vow during the movie. It's just at the end that he realized that he isn't. So I really hope that the last movie closed for him this revenge plot, and he can move on.
Oh, no, you're right. I got those mixed up. I apologize.
No, I get, I'm sure a lot of people get this mixed up, because I love this plot, but the way it's exposed is not the most effective way to everyone to understand. So
that's true. And in general, I'm fond of having Yusuf Kama around as a character. So I like to think that he's more the double agent than likely to go to the dark side. I just would prefer not to see it happen.
Yeah, same.
We had another answer from Taylor Alexander Bose on Facebook. They said, I really think Queenie will be the one to be a double agent. Maybe there's something we can't see with her, or maybe she figures out after joining Grindelwald. Yusuf has me puzzled. So they seem to think that Queenie is the one who's going to turn double agent. And if I'm reading this right, she thinks it's double agent against Grindelwald?
Yeah, that's what I understand too. Because, yeah, at the end of last movie, we guessed that Queenie is definitely joining Grindelwald. But maybe she was already a double agent, we don't know. But, yeah, what Taylor is implying is that she realized that Grindelwald is not the best choice and she turned double agent. But we can have two double agent.
Rule, especially in a war, there's no rule that says you can't have more than one double agent at a time.
And maybe it's Yusuf joining, in quote, Grindelwald with this double agent plan and getting Queenie to be a double agent too, because she already is looking for an escape plan, and Yusuf comes and he knows that Queenie has a doubt about Grindelwald, and he helps her to turn double agent too. That's my new fan fiction in my head.
That's interesting. Yeah. You know what would be really, really interesting to see? Snape was a Death Eater, and then he turned double agent for Dumbledore. At this moment, it looks like Yusuf Kama is working as an agent for Dumbledore. Not that I want him to go over to Grindelwald's side for real, but wouldn't it be interesting if before Dumbledore had this double agent from the main villain who turns up working for him, he loses somebody to the main villain of this story by having Yusuf Kama go over to Grindelwald's side.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting parallel. I still don't want Yusuf Kama to go over to the dark side, but I'm trying to think of, if it comes to that, ways that I can make myself feel better about the fact that it happened.
Yeah, again.
So I guess that's how I would look at that if it does turn out Yusuf Kama is a double agent.
Yeah. Anyway, we want an interesting development for Yusuf.
I have a feeling we'll get that. He's an intriguing man played by an intriguing actor, and whatever his role ends up being in the film, I have no doubt that there will be plenty to talk about once we've seen it.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, that is going to do it for the Owl Post for this episode. So we'll just go ahead and send the owls on their way. Bye-bye, owls.
Bye.
Yep, make sure to get some owl treats on your way out. They're there for you. And with that, we will turn back to our interview with Joshua Shea.
And now it's time, of course, for our main discussion, which is very special today because it's our interview with Josh. And yeah, we want to know everything about your experience in the movie. And so before we can talk about your job as young Newt, I want to mention that I listened to your music while preparing for this interview.
Ah.
It was really perfect for a Sunday afternoon cozy vibe. So yeah, I wanted to say that I loved it. And maybe if you want to tell us more about the chaise, your chaise? I don't know how you pronounce it.
Yes, the chaise. Yeah, that's it. You got it right.
Yeah, so your group with your sister, from what I understood. Yeah.
So last summer, me and my sister were writing a lot of music together, and we decided that we'd kind of join forces because both of us we really enjoy writing music, and it's not necessarily because obviously I do a lot of acting stuff, but I also really love music. So we decided that we felt like it would be good for us to just work together, and that was a really exciting thing to do. We've got some exciting music coming out too. We've got a new song coming out called Lost in Records on February the 11th, I think.
Ooh.
It is.
It will be.
That's a very nice title.
Yeah, it's the idea of the song is about, well, I guess it's all about sort of feeling like you put things out there in the world and you're not quite sure where it's going to land or whether it's just going to get lost in the amount of stuff that's coming out. And I guess that's the idea of it. So it's all about kind of love and how that idea of, yeah, not getting lost in the world. So yeah, this is cool. I'm looking forward to sharing it with people.
Yeah.
It sounds like a perfect song for these days, because everybody's got, I mean, we're all musicians and podcasters, and apparently some of us are actors in here, so we're all putting things out there, and it's just, there's so much of it.
Yeah. No, it's so true. There's so much music coming out, so many movies, so many things, and it's really exciting, but I feel like it, maybe people feel like they're getting lost in all of that, and I think everyone can relate to that, so I think that's... Hopefully people can listen to it and feel like they have some resonance to it.
I hope so. Now, you mentioned you and your sister have been writing the songs together. Is one of you more the songwriter and one of you is maybe more the performer? Is it sort of equal between the two of you?
It's very much dependent on the song. So Lost in Records is something that I probably did more of the writing of, and I sing the main track. So, but there's other songs that my sister's written and she's singing on. Quite a lot of it is not released yet, so... the next year is going to be exciting to show everyone what we've been working on. But yeah, it's really like very collaborative. And I think that's the nice thing about working with my sister is that we kind of help each other. We know like the ways in which we want to help each other out. And if a song is more personal to one of us, then we won't kind of, you know, try and impinge on that or try and take away from something that's very personal. Yeah,
that's beautiful.
It's a very personal thing, I think, songwriting, because... You know, you're writing from your experiences, and sometimes a song is just best left untouched by one or the other of us. So yeah, it's really exciting, and but also I find myself, I'm better at sort of chordal things, so working out chords on the piano, and she's really good at lyrics and finding interesting ways of saying things, which sometimes I struggle with a little bit more, but yeah, it's very collaborative.
So in addition to acting, do you have a background in music lessons and training for instruments as well?
Yeah, I always learnt the piano. My mum was very she was very adamant that we had piano lessons, and we played, and I'm so glad she did, because there were definitely times where I was like didn't want to learn like classical pieces and things, but I think it's really, really been helpful to learn the basics, and then to be able to like use that to write my own music and for the stuff we're doing now. So I'm really interested in like jazz piano now, so I'm doing more like chords and following chord sheets. So yeah,
I've caught that in some of the songs. My wife and I were listening to some of your songs when we were on our way to work the other day, and even she caught, I listen to a lot more jazz than she does, but even she caught it. She said this one feels kind of like a jazz song.
Yeah I released a song called Talk to Me. It's our latest single that we released. And we kind of wanted to get sort of a slightly more jazzy feel to it. And it was something that was just a bit fun, because we were writing a lot of sad, sad songs at the time during lockdown, quite understandably. So we just were like, you know, we need to write a happy song. We're going to try our best to write something. And Talk to Me was what came out of it. So we were just kind of imagining life outside of lockdown and that sort of jazzy, kind of almost La La Land-esque world.
Yeah, I got this vibe too. And I realized how amazing it is that we have so many musicians in the Fantaxivist cast. And we even got a Christmas album 2 years ago, which was really, really fun. And I want them to make another with you in it, because you were not in the Christmas
album. I know, I was waiting for the invite. No, I had to listen to it, it's great. And I love Alison Sudol's music as well. It's very ethereal and cool.
I was about to say that I want to suggest a duet with you and Alison Sudol for the next Christmas album.
Oh, I second that. One. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, well, hopefully there'll be another one. We'll have to see. Yeah.
So now that we've kind of dipped our toes into the Fantastic Beasts universe already, why don't we just go ahead and dive right into how you kind of got started in all of that? Because you're a musician as well as an actor, and still quite young, but off to an incredible start with your career. So how did you find your way into acting? Was it something that you were always interested in?
Yeah, so I've always loved performing. I always was involved with stage productions. I was involved with different productions such as like Les Mis, Annie, the musical, and I played the apple seller in Annie when I was younger. And I think what I really enjoyed was going onto stage, and I felt like it was a really nice escape. And that was the sort of first discovery that I enjoyed performing. And film acting was one of those things that kind of, I didn't necessarily think would happen. You know, you see the films and you kind of go, how do people get there, and how does that happen? And for me, it was kind of very coincidental in some ways. So I did a summer school that I did every year called West End Experience in Jersey, where I grew up. And there was some, we always did like dancing and singing and acting, and it was like a week intensive workshop. And there were different people that came along, industry people that would sort of, I guess in some ways, scout people. I was very fortunate to be taken into this agency with this with one of the chaps who came along to see one of our shows. And I sort of got some photos, and he put me onto his books. And well, what I mean by he put me onto his books, he sort of was started putting me up for roles and things at that sort of time. So that was really exciting. But Fantastic Beasts was one of those things that actually didn't come through an agent, my agent at the time. Mm. It came out of the open casting call, which they put out on Pottermore at the time. And I think partly because I was going up for auditions at the time, and I was starting to get experience doing that. I was very much like, I had a little bit of experience with auditions, so I felt like I wasn't walking into it completely with my eyes shut. But there was definitely a sense in which I was just like every other person who put themselves forward for the open casting call, and was amongst quite a few people, I think.
So now remind me, the open casting call that you're referring to that was on Pottermore, was it specifically for the role of Newt Scamander, or was it just for actors in general?
It was just for actors in general. They were sort of, I remember it saying, we're looking for actors between this age and this age. And I actually didn't know it was for the character of Newt quite a long way into that audition process. I remember my first audition video that I sent in, and I remember just saying, I'm auditioning for a role in Fantastic Beasts, and I didn't know what it was. I knew it was a young character of something. So I was very much, I think at the time I knew that Jude Law was playing Dumbledore. I knew that Eddie Redmayne was obviously playing the main character, Newt, and I knew at the time that Johnny Depp was in the film. I was thinking, it's one of those three people, I assume, because there's not really any other people that I could kind of weave into playing.
Could you see yourself playing a younger Gellert Grindelwald, do you think, now that you've had the Newt character?
I think with a bit of time, I don't think that would have happened. I don't think I've got evil enough vibes. So, maybe in another universe.
Now you're talking about this, because I'm sure we covered this open call on the podcast at the time, because we were eager to have any clues from what will happen. And I'm sure we had this idea that it might be young version of certain characters, and we were kind of expecting flashback from Newt. So at what point did you realize that it was for a young version of Eddie Redmayne, and how this realization came to you? And already maybe you, because it's something special, because they were looking, it's the type of audition that they already know what they are looking for, exactly the type of face, the type of vibe that they are looking for. It's not for a character that can be fit to different type of people. So at what point did you realize it was for a young version of Eddie Redmayne, and what did you thought of that?
Yeah, well, when they sent back an audition tape for me to do, it was an improvised scene. So they said to me that they wanted to just an improvised scene of me finding a hurt animal. That was the outline they gave, and it was very, very. So I was like, okay, well, I think that was the first clue. Because I think, you know, there's not many characters that have that care and understanding of animals. And I think at that point I was starting to kind of hook onto it. But I didn't confirm that. So I kind of made a decision. I was thinking, I'm going to look at Eddie Redmayne's character and what he does with animals. And I think that was when I first was like, I think it's Eddie Redmayne that I'm having a play at here. They called me back from that audition tape, still not telling me what the role was. So I went to London. I met up with, I sat in this waiting room for about a couple of hours with lots of other similar looking guys and a few girls as well. And I was thinking, I think it was they were casting for the girl as well. So it was very much like finding a match between two characters. And I walked into the room and the director was there. It was David Yates' office that we had this audition in. And there was the amazing casting director, Fiona Weir, there. And I just remember sitting there, and again, it was improvised. And it was about finding her animal, and then this other character, Lita, who I didn't even know was Lita at the time, walking in and sort of talking to me. And I just remember sort of faces kind of zooming in on me at the time that I sort of just started talking. I was so nervous. I think I was so, like, it was such a new thing for me, and I felt like it took me a while to feel comfortable. But I just remember feeling, like, so excited to, I don't know, just be in the room and to be working. It just felt like it kind of fit the mold. I don't know how to describe it. You know, when something just feels right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not, yeah. So it was very exciting.
So you said that you started to suspect that it was Eddie Redmayne's character. Had anybody ever given you any indication that you looked anything like him before that?
No, not really. I think maybe people, maybe I was, you know, when you just, you know who you are and you think, mm-hmm. This is a really weird thing to say, but I don't see myself looking like Eddie Redmayne, but I'm assuming other people go, you look so much like Eddie Redmayne. But for
well,
me,
I do
I was
now,
thinking...
but that might be the film. Like, seeing yeah. you trying to capture the same mannerisms, playing the same character as him, I think, you know what? They really nailed it. He looks just like him.
Thanks. I mean, I think it took work, you know. I think there's so many mannerisms that are different about the character, and that was what was exciting about the later process. But I think that was what the funny thing is I actually asked before I walked into the audition room, I think one of the associate casting directors, and I was thinking, I asked her, just out of interest, what character am I going for? And she was like, oh, you don't know? And I was like, no one's told me. And I was like, oh, of course they haven't told you. Classic. And she then said, you're going for the character of Newt. And I was thinking, oh, I thought so, kind of thing. So that was the first time that I think I knew. But yeah, I think coming back to your question about, I think maybe it was obvious to other people. They're like, of course you're going for Newt because you've got the similar features. And but because they hadn't told me, I was thinking, I don't want to sort of make any assumptions.
Yeah.
No, you mentioned how further in the process, trying to inhabit those same mannerisms that Eddie kind of applies when he's Newt. Did you have to study him at all, or did you two of you ever actually have a chance to work together?
Yeah, well, the great thing was that I had a whole first movie to study. Which was really, really good, because I think a lot of projects you're kind of working with much smaller amount of resources to find a character. And I think the great thing was that I could look at the first film, and I could look at some of those mannerisms. I think the most important thing that I wanted, though, before I talk about meeting Eddie, was that I wasn't trying to sort of mimic his little kind of gestures and things. I didn't want to become like an I didn't want to sort of mimic what he mm-hmm. was doing. I'd rather sort of find it authentically in myself and then see what comes out of that. I guess the great thing is that looking at the first movie was a really good way of getting a sense of the character and his general sort of aura. Mm-hmm. But yeah, moving on to when I had the amazing opportunity to meet Eddie, they started filming, and I didn't come and start filming until the September, and they had been filming since June. So I'd had some costume fittings, and I was starting to kind of prepare myself for the filming after the summer. And I actually went to Australia on a family trip over the summer. So it was like, I knew I had the role, I'd had some costume fittings, and I knew I was going to return to the UK and start filming in September. And so they sort of mentioned, they were like, you know, we're going to organise a meeting with you at some point with Eddie. And I was like, oh, this is so exciting. But they didn't say when. Again, classic. They wouldn't tell me when anything was going to happen until the day before. And anyway, they actually, for this occasion, they didn't tell me until the day that I arrived on the set. So I arrived for what I thought was just a costume fitting, or one of the days of, you know, where they were going to try things out and get my costume. Yeah, all those sort of different pre-production things. And there was a man standing on set with his back turned. And he was standing just outside one of the trailers, and we pulled up, and he turned around, and it was Eddie Redmayne, of course.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was a very... I think we had a bit of a sort of starstruck moment when I was sitting in the car, And I think me and my mum, because my mum was with me at the time, she was, at the time I was under 18, so she was chaperoning. We kind of had to sort of, the funny thing as well is the driver had never seen Eddie Redmayne either, so he was having a little sort of moment as well. He was like, whoa, I've never seen him in reality. So we sort of...
Collective Star Trek.
Yeah, collect ourselves and then walk out.
You know,
out
the way car. Any of us might.
Yeah, go like, it's fine, he's just a man. So we walked out of the car and he was so lovely, I think. You know, when we first chatted to him, he kind of put us at ease very quickly and we sort of introduced ourselves. And then I actually spent the whole morning chatting to him and about the character, which was so, so exciting.
Yeah, so speaking about the character, I know Eddie talked about how he views Newt on the autistic spectrum. And so was it something that you had in mind too? Or does it something that you talked to Eddie about and... Yeah, incorporating to how you thought about not only the mannerism, but how he talks, what type of headspace he was at this age.
Yeah, it was definitely part of our conversations. I think it's a very sensitive thing when you're playing an autistic person, and I think it took a lot of research and time to kind of understand a bit more about, which was really exciting. Eddie had made a decision with J.K. Rowling that he was on the autistic spectrum, and I think he had spoken with her quite in depth about this. I think for me, I didn't want to play the autism because I think he is an introverted and very caring person. And I think that was what I wanted to kind of come across, or bring across on the screen. I think his love for animals and his sort of detailed focus on that and that his sort of seclusion from everything else that's going on at Hogwarts was what I kind of wanted to focus on, because that's all I, you know, I had like a little sort of little snippet of his life, and that's all I kind of had to focus on. So I spoke to Eddie about that, and I think it was more just trying to match Eddie's performance in a way that felt like I wasn't trying to push it in a certain direction. I just kind of wanted to fit into what Eddie was doing, but also find my own kind of way of finding something new in it as well. So it was that balance, I think. I really loved having the chance to play someone who was autistic, and I think in many ways I find, even though I'm not autistic myself, I find it kind of has resonances with me when I feel like maybe very uncomfortable in social situations at times. And so it's just finding ways that I could find the truth in myself and my own experiences.
So it sounds like a lot of things about your own experience and personality, you were able to work into that sort of introverted nature that came with Newt, but... Did you have to kind of keep that going while you were on set, or were you able to actually connect and make friends while you were there?
Yeah, I think because of course, like the main person that I chatted with and got to know was Thea Lam, who played Lita, and I got to know her really well. That she was the only person I had scenes with. So in some way, of course I had scenes with the other students and Jude Law as well. I don't forget that. But
yeah, I forget meeting Jude Law, I'm sure.
No, of course I don't. I almost forgot for a second. But I think my general like day-to-day interactions was with Thea and her mum, actually, and it was the kind of me, my mum, Thea and her mum were like a little sort of gang, I guess.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so it was such an incredible experience. I was so intrigued with every department. I wanted to know about the costume department. I wanted to meet all the makeup and cameramen, and I was just fascinated with the whole thing. I wanted to kind of, you know, I was just kind of wandering around, probably a bit too much. I think they're probably thinking, Josh, just sit in your tent and be, you know. But, you know, you've got to make the most of it. When you're on a set like that, you sort of want to ask the questions and want to know more. So,
oh, sure. And it's a big set to be on, you know, for your first role. So, of course, it's like you were saying before about how you never know how things are going to work out and you never know where you're going to end up. So naturally, you want to take in as much as you can while you have the chance, I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it was really cool to hear about. I think the amazing thing about the film industry is the number of people, the number of creative people bringing their skills together to kind of bring that magical world to life. And I think that's what I really appreciated and really kind of... And it's like such teamwork. They work in such kind of... Such a synchronized and efficient way to bring the film to life. It was just amazing to see. It kind of... It definitely sparked a love of the world of film. And it was kind of like, I want to be in this world wherever it is.
So was there a department that you discovered on set that you really thought, oh, and I had no idea what what was that? That there was this type of department on set, and you were specifically interested about on set?
Yeah, I think what I was really surprised by was a guy who had sort of had a model of the boat ruckle, and he'd spend his time working on the movement patterns of this creature. And he actually had this sort of little puppet that he showed me. I found that was such an intriguing job because I was thinking, you know, it's so niche. You know, a person who stands there and works out all the individual movements of a little beast. That was so exciting. When I actually did the scene, I think what they did is they showed me what the size and shape of the creature. And then I just basically had sort of red dots on my hand and kind of had to imagine it there. But yeah, coming back to your question, I think one of the things was, you know, in the Defense Against the Dark Arts classroom, they have like all those shape-shifting objects in front of us.
Oh yeah.
The amazing thing was, is that when we were looking at, we were obviously, most of the time we didn't look at anything, but to give all the students a sense of things moving in front of us, they got this amazing sort of contortionist person who was under a black sheet, and she was moving her body in this really interesting way to kind of create this sort of sense of shape-shifting. Wow. The shape-shifting nature of what was changing in front of us.
Oh, cool.
And I think that was really cool. Yeah, it was really exciting.
Yeah, I never heard that they had a real-life boggart playing.
Yeah, exactly. We had a boggart in front of us.
Now imagine comparing that, a bunch of students in a classroom with Jude Law, and you have this interpretive dancer under a sheet in front of you. Compare that to Eddie Redmayne doing a mating dance in front of this enormous cage with several people in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think there's from the looks of the new trailer, I think there's even more funny dancing from Eddie Redmayne in the next movie as well.
Yes.
Well, he's got moves. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, he has got the moves. He has definitely got the moves.
Now, you talked a lot about your relationship with Thea, which was very touching. And the two of you had incredible on-screen chemistry. And there's a debate in the fandom that we wondered where you settle on it, because I think it might have come across a little bit in some of your acting choices. Do you think that there was a romantic connection between those two people, or do you think that they were just friends?
That's a really interesting question. And it was something that I chatted a lot with Eddie about. Actually, inside knowledge, I'm going to tell you this. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to, but I'm going to tell you this. Is in the second, when I first read the script, they were said to kiss in the script.
Did you film that?
We didn't. It was a decision that... I feel like I'm going to be shot by all the Warner Bros. Snipers for saying this, but
we won't turn you in.
Basically, what happened was I chatted to Eddie about it, and it was actually Eddie's idea. I think he said that it, you know, even if there was, I definitely think there was a romantic relationship in some way, but I don't think it was hugely intimate. I think it was a very much like a caring, loving friendship, and I think it's that balance. I think yes, they. Maybe they did have a relationship, but I think it was very much... I don't think Newt is the kind of person who's very touchy-feely and you know, I don't imagine him walking around kissing girls at school. So
no.
I'm glad we made that decision.
I think you're right on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was why we made the decision. I think Eddie was like, it feels too much, a kiss. And I think we decided on this sort of, if you look very carefully, there's kind of like a hand touch, mm-hmm. I think that was enough to kind of convey a sense of like intimacy and their kind of connection.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about these scenes is that it's Lita's memory. So we see these scenes through Lita's point of view, I guess. So I guess that's what, because in the first movie, we first introduced to Lita through Newt, and we see that maybe Newt was in love with her, but something happened, and now we have Lita's point of view that it's quite obvious that she had feeling for him. So that's why the fans talked a lot about it, because now we have the proof that both of them have feelings for each other, but we still don't really know. And I think it's fine that we don't really know what happened and how they. Because obviously they were teenagers, but as adults we see that there is still something between them, but there is features too. So yeah, we kind of wonder if who was the one who decided to move on to something something else. We kind of figured that it was Lita first, but now we are not sure with the flashbacks memories. So
yeah. So it's almost a shame that she's kind of been killed off. You're thinking, oh, I want to know more, you know. but yeah, I think in if your question is, I think it's so... I think there's something nice about the mystery of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm interested to know whether they explore Newt's past more and look at the way that he was expelled. And also the fact that Lita gets with his brother. You think, that must have been pretty heartbreaking. If Newt did really like Lita, then... that must have felt pretty hard.
it probably happens to everybody.
Yeah, like, oh yeah, he's like, she's like, yeah, I'll just get with his brother because, you know, it just seems like, you know, it's quite funny, isn't it? But not funny, it's very heartbreaking.
I think you might have actually just answered something we were going to ask you, because we debate on this show in particular all the time whether or not... you may have seen there's a hashtag Lita Lives that people like to argue about whether or not she's really gone or not. But I think you may have just let us know where you stand on that one.
Oh, yes. I don't. I have to be honest. I don't know. I think I don't even get told things, and you know. So I think we'll have to wait and see. I don't know what happens in the next film. Whether she's. I mean, I feel like her death was so final in the last movie that. To bring her back, I think would be a bit sort of. I think I'd be a bit like, why?
Yeah.
You know.
Thank you. Just because you are it's my a magical side. World. Thank you.
I agree. Thank goodness. This interview is with two people from the show who are of the same mind. Because now we won't have to argue it any further. Matters settled.
I think the thing is about films, especially magical films. If you kill someone off, you have to have a very good reason to bring them back to life. Do you know what I mean? And I think I think, you know, and maybe there is a really good reason she comes back to life, but I think, you know, death is pretty final in the, it seemed pretty final in the last movie. So
you're absolutely right. And another show that I was actually listening to just a couple hours before we sat down to record this one, one of the hosts was talking about how every time they read young adult fantasy now and a character dies, there's always this hesitancy with them where they think, but are they really?
Because are they really, really dead?
This is very close to that genre. And in that genre, people come back to life all the time.
Well, like even in the Avengers, everyone died, didn't they? You know, well, actually, spoiler, whoops.
But, it's been out for years now. It's the highest grossing film. Everybody who's going to see it has seen it. Just go
exactly.
Off.
Exactly. But they all died and then they all came back again. You think, oh, really? You know?
Well, they all came back and then never mind.
Yeah. And more happens to be continued.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's so true. I think that's why fantasy sometimes gets it wrong. I'm not saying, well, maybe if they bring Lita back, then I'll, I don't think they're bringing Lita back though. So that's final, I think.
Yeah.
I think.
As much as I would love it if we could have more Zoe Kravitz, because who doesn't want that?
No, exactly.
I think you're right. I think it just makes the most sense to just leave it where it is.
Yeah, I think so. I think they've got enough characters to be getting on with in the film as well. So
sure. You are not wrong. There are plenty of characters.
There is a lot. Yeah, it's good. I'm excited to see where they take it in the next one. So, yes.
Yeah. But another way that they could bring Lita back would be with Thea and you, with more backstories, because you mentioned how Newt got expelled. And that's also another big debate because we still don't really know. We have some clues. And actually, myself, so maybe you will say that, no, we have... enough to say that he definitely got expelled, but I'm not entirely sure he was expelled, because what I understood, Dumbledore maybe prevent that and defended Newt and managed to not that Newt wasn't expelled, but I'm not sure about that, so maybe you will be able to confirm or not, but
it seems that you know more about it than I do. I don't know. I think in some ways it's a lot has been left unsaid. I don't quite know how much J.K. Rowling has kind of revealed about it and how much she's going to kind of expand upon in the next films. So, yeah, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I think it's really just dependent on how much it's relevant to the way the plot moves forward.
Yeah.
Because if Newt's history is not really relevant to the plot and the way it's moving, then it may or may not be there. So.
Yeah, because I think some of the theories was that Lita was involved in this case that led to Newt's possibly getting expelled. So, yeah, I don't know if you have some... even headcanon for yourself when you were working on the characters about maybe you didn't needed to have that because it's in the future of your characters on screen, the expel maybe getting expelled or not. But did you construct some headcanon background information for yourself?
Yeah, I think to a certain degree I didn't speculate too much into the future because when you're living in the present, he obviously had these feelings for Lita at the time, and it was not really relevant to me to like kind of try and predict the future. Maybe it was just for my own kind of maybe after I filmed it, I was thinking, oh, I wonder what happens next, and I wonder, you know, what Newt's what the rest of his experience at Hogwarts was, and what, you know, the thing I definitely think is that magical creatures can they're amazing, but they're also dangerous. And I think some of them especially, and I think maybe Newt has a very high regard for the way animals are, and I think he thinks the best of every animal. But I love that line in the film. I can't remember exactly what she says, but you know, Lita says a really nice line about you find the good in everyone or something. Yeah. It's a really nice line.
There wasn't a monster you couldn't love, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, something about a monster he couldn't love.
There's never a monster that you couldn't love, and I love that line because it's, you know, again, she thinks herself a monster, and I think obviously there is a sense of guilt there on Lita's part, and a love that she still has and has for Newt in the present. So yeah, I found that like really moving, and I guess that's what I focused on was this kind of love that he shared for her in the same way that he shared for his animals.
Yeah.
And that was something that he hadn't shared before, the human being before, I don't think.
Yeah, and that's what we got with your scenes. Every time that he interacts with Lita, instead of like talking directly about her or what happened in the classroom, he talked about animals, he talked about Botrical or about a baby raven, I think.
Yeah, so little raven.
He always talked about her via talking about animals, which is really cute. Because when he talked about Botrical, it almost feels like he's talking about him observing her and trying to understand her too. So that's really cute.
Yeah, I think it's their way of connection. It's like kind of, and I think that's part of his character, is that's the best, that's the way he connects to her, is through his animals. And I think that's the way he connects with a lot of people. and hopefully more of Tina too, because I think I love their little moments in the film as well. I want more.
Oh, yes! Absolutely. Because trust me, people have noticed the lack of Tina in the trailer, and we're just hoping that it looks worse than it is, because we love some Tina. We love some Catherine Waterston on the show.
Yeah, she's great. I love the way that she's quite quirky as well in the films. I think they've got kind of a similar sort of the way they talk to each other, I think, is just lovely. I think that scene with them in the last film, it was just really nice. where he's like the eyes of a salamander. You know, that really lovely scene.
Oh, like that's salamander. A great scene.
So I want more of that. I'm excited.
Now, speaking of great scenes, and earlier you were talking about how you did the Boggart in the wardrobe and how you kind of shot that scene. One of the scenes that you and Thea had that was really great is when you're on what we like to think of as Botrugle Island.
Yes.
So was it similar there where you had something that you were interacting with in place of an actual Botrugle? How did you guys do that scene?
Yeah, so the funny thing about that was it looks like you're in this expansive Scottish area. And it's, you know, sorry to break the magic, but we were actually in Watford. on a film set.
That's all right.
And the amazing thing about it was they had like a real life tree. It was beautiful, and they basically built the island. So they had like amazing grass and moss, and they'd done it really nicely. But just where it meets with the water, that was kind of all sort of blue and green screen. So we had like an island in a green screen, and that was Botrugle Island. But it was so cool. I remember that day. I think we did it a couple of days because the light changed and we had to redo a few bits. But it was so cold, and so there was me. You know, I had little red dots. I had three red dots on my hand, and I was talking about that puppeteer earlier. He kind of came onto set again and showed us the Botrugle and how it moved. So I got the sense of the way that the Botrugle would move and its size, and then I kind of imagined what it would look like and what it would feel like. I met with this amazing side note. I met with this amazing movement director called Alex, who had worked with Eddie for a long time on different films, including like The Theory of Everything. So she was very, very experienced with movement, And she talked to me a lot about the kind of weight of an animal, and feeling like the sense that an animal kind of, it has like a weight to it. So when I move my hands in a sort of way to let the animal kind of move across your hand, you kind of have to imagine it walking on you and that weight of it.
That's
so that was really cool. Yeah, it was such a learning experience and really good for your like imagination, because you're sort of imagining this creature moving about on your hand. Pretty cool.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that's one of those jobs that you mentioned earlier where you really don't realize until you're in that environment, like, this is a whole job. Somebody has to make sure that you understand the movement of this creature that's really just three dots on your hand, so that people are going to buy that there's this thing weighing your hand down.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Incredible.
The other scene with the raven, I spent a long time. There was one shot that we spent a long time trying to get. I think it was actually, this shot was cut from the film. It's like a close-up of me picking up the bird. And every time I tried to get underneath the nest where the bird was meant to be sitting, I managed to kind of pick up a piece of straw from the little like nest. So they're like, we're going to have to do it again. And I just kept, and it just little sort of little things kept coming up with my hand.
So there you have an obstacle.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to try not to disturb that. So there's an extra challenge for you.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I think they actually sort of cut straight to me picking up the bird rather than the close up of the, you know, the bird in my hand. So yes, cut shot, not cut scene.
And speaking of the other scenes, and more specifically about the guy that you almost forgot that you played with, Jude Law.
Oh, yeah.
How cool was it to be in a classroom with Jude Law as your professor and as Dumbledore? And yeah, do you have specific memories about interacting with him and the vibe of this room? Because I guess that would be a very special thing to be in this room.
Yeah, it was. I mean, he's just as warm and generous as he appears on screen. Like, he's absolutely lovely. And I think, you know, when you're working with an older actor, maybe at first you feel a bit intimidated because you think, oh, he's very experienced and he's very knowledgeable. But he was very kind and very patient. The funny thing again is I read the script and I'm never quite sure whether I don't think at the time when I first read the script, I didn't know whether they were going to get another actor to play the younger Dumbledore, whether it was, you know, because obviously he plays Dumbledore a bit younger and then he's a bit older. So I didn't actually kind of know it was going to be Jude Law until I asked Eddie. I was sort of asked just to clarify, is it Jude Law playing Dumbledore with me in this scene? Because you don't really know until you're there. Otherwise, and he was like, oh yeah, it is. It's Jude. So we arrived on set and David Yates, the director, introduced all of us to him. I didn't have a huge chance to sort of chat to him one-on-one, but yeah, I had a really, you know, it was nice to sort of work with him and work very closely with him. He's a very hard-working actor and has done lots of really exciting projects, so it was just really good to sort of observe his process and how seriously he takes his job. So that was really good to see.
Yeah, that's fun how I imagine that, how it you are playing a class, a teaching moment at the same time. I guess as a young actor, you are watching a very experienced actor working, so you're also learning, you are playing Hogwarts student learning at the same time you are yourself learning as an actor. That's
it brings like authenticity to it, you know. He is my superior in the scene and also in real life, you know, so in some ways it was very natural and I felt kind of honored to be in his presence. So it was really cool, and I think what I learned from Eddie as well is just the amount of time and preparation they all put into their work. And I think Eddie's like a Newt encyclopedia. You just kind of got to ask, yeah, go chat to him about any question you have about Newt, because he'll be able to answer it. But that's part, you've got to know everything, because if you're playing someone, you've got to kind of have put those sort of join the dots together and really kind of have, you know, I think obviously he knows the full trajectory of the series. So in some ways, you know, it was like trying to kind of reap clues from him as well.
That reminds me, did you talk about Newt's family? Because obviously we met Theseus, but we know a little bit about Newt's mother. We still haven't even mentioned, or we obviously haven't met her yet on the films, but we kind of gather that Newt's love for Fantastic Beasts came from his mother, breeding fancy hippogriffs, I think. That's what. So did you talk about this background, this family background of Newt?
Funnily enough, that wasn't something that we chatted about particularly. Obviously, I'm assuming he, as you say, like, I'm assuming that a lot of his love for animals. I'm interested to know if we ever meet his parents or whether they're still alive. I assume they are. Unless, I don't think there's any kind of tragic incident where they're not alive. But it was interesting. I didn't actually think about that. But I'm assuming you have to ask Eddie when you if you get a chance to speak to him.
Yeah, I mean, we hope we'll be able to. But yeah, talked a lot about the different scene. But did you have a favorite day on set, or maybe a worst day on set? I don't know.
I have to say there was no bad day on set. I remember, I think the thing about film sets generally is that, you know, it's an incredible place, but also, you know, it is like a moving building site. And it's quite simply like that. There's these incredible people building these sets, and then the next day they're moving on, it's being taken down, and it's the next thing. So I've sort of touched upon it, but I remember it was the day where I was on that little island. It was very, very cold. And I remember the funny thing was that they had to keep doing this shot where I was taking the bow truckle off the tree because my hand was shivering so much. And it was one of those moments where I was like, I'm really sorry, you know, I'm so sorry. I'm trying to get this right and I'm trying to keep my hand still. And the more you try and keep your hand still, the more it just kind of shakes, especially when you're cold.
No kidding.
Yeah, I know. You're like, please just stay still. And they're thinking, you know, it's not meant to look like it's, you know, my hand's about to fall off. But it was so sweet because on one of the camera department, he was like, you know, come here. And he had like these really warm gloves and he was kind of just warming my hands up between takes. And it was so, it was kind of a sweet moment of like connection with the crew. And it just made me think again of the teamwork and everyone wanting to kind of get the best out of everyone. So it was good. It was good fun.
Yeah.
So we don't want to get you in trouble with anybody. You mentioned Warner Brothers snipers. I don't know if that's a thing or not. Maybe you're joking. Maybe
I think it's a metaphor. A metaphor.
Hopefully,
the Warner Bros. Snipers.
Hopefully, it's just a metaphor. But it would be nice, wouldn't it, if we could see you back on the screen in the near future.
It would be nice indeed. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Yeah, not in the next film. I can say that. But maybe.
Oh, you can say that.
Yeah. I can say okay. That, but maybe in the future, there's hopefully more to come after the next one. So
yeah. I think we talked about that if we will have flashback, it will probably be more focused on Dumbledore because we need some background knowledge about Dumbledore. So yeah, I guess they can't. We were hoping that maybe one day they will do a whole movie just on the. the background and the flashbacks, but yeah, obviously
it seems like he is going to be the main focus of the next film. Mm-hmm. And it comes back to what I was saying before, is that I think it really depends what's sort of relevant to the narrative. Yeah. And where it's kind of going. So it might just be that the flashback for Newt and other things is just not so important in the next film. So maybe that's something to kind of speculate about. I mean, the name kind of gives it away. I think the secrets of Dumbledore. I think there's going to be more about that. So
we've done our fair share of speculating about that name.
Oh, yes.
Like the moment we got it, we were in the booth trying to figure out what it means.
Yes. Yeah. It's exciting. I'm wondering. I'm still kind of a bit in the dark about what's going to happen next, but I guess that's exciting.
Sure. Yeah. And like we said earlier, the flashback we got, it was for Lita's character. It was focused on Lita and what we needed to learn about Lita to complete her arc before her death. But I guess it will depend on what we need to know about Newt in the future movie to understand his role, maybe his relationship with Dumbledore, because they have a quite particular relationship. And maybe we will need to learn more about how it started at Hogwarts. Maybe
let's
hope that it would be a chance to you to have a one-on-one scene with Jude Law. That would be cool.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the next film has in store, so I guess we'll get more clues as to which direction they're going in. And but the funny thing about Warner Bros. Is I probably won't get a call until the day before they need me. So you know, who knows? Maybe they'll still call me. I think it's a bit late now. But
I guess so. But
well, you never know. The film industry is an interesting place, especially the last couple of years. They've had to change a lot of things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully, that's the exciting thing about Harry Potter is that you never quite know which direction they're going to go, and hopefully a good one.
That's true.
And another thing, you mentioned the kiss that was cut from the scripts, but can you maybe remember or mention other scene or moment that were shot or even was in a script that didn't end up in the movie, or was just this big quite important thing that you mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, none of my scenes were cut, so I was quite happy about that. I felt like that was a compliment in itself. But you know, it's always I think there was one sad story of an actor who was meant to be in the film who was just completely cut out. I can't remember what it was, but I felt very sad for this actor whose character I think was completely cut out of the film. But it always must be tough when you kind of when you film a scene and you sort of really enjoy doing it, and then it's just is taken out. I think mainly scenes are just taken out because of length and
sure.
plot movement, but thankfully the flashbacks were all kind of kept. And yeah, so yeah, none of my scenes, but
cool.
But it always happens. I think when you're doing a project, you've got to kind of be. I mean, I've done more of my own projects recently, and it's kind of not. It's been quite ruthless with material and going, is this adding to the narrative? If not, then is it needed?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, editors have the hardest job. They really do. I've heard a lot of them on other podcasts talking about how people will occasionally come after them if things they thought were really good, if they don't get used or if they get cut short. And it seems like they almost get no joy out of not being able to use all of it sometimes.
Yeah.
But they have to make those tough decisions, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think also that I think the director is very much involved with those big decisions like that, you know, in the editing process. So I'm assuming directors get the rap as well, but you know, they've got to make a creative decision and, you know, trust their instinct with what they think is going to make a exciting and sort of engaging film.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned focusing on your own projects, and unfortunately we won't get to see you in Secrets of Dumbledore, but is there anything that you're currently working on or about to start working on that you can talk about so that we can get an idea of where we might find you next?
Yeah, so at the moment I'm finishing off a short film which I've been working on for a while. It's actually my own short film which I've directed and written. It's called Before the Tide Comes In, and we're currently finishing off. It's quite experimental, so it's very different from Fantastic Beasts, but it's about two people who find themselves buried up to their necks in sand on a beach with only 20 minutes left before the tide comes in. So it's pretty exciting. It's been fun to bring my own project to life and see it from the other side of the camera. So that's been a really cool exciting project. Acting wise, I'm doing some sort of other projects as well, which over the next year I'll be able to talk about more as well. Yeah, lots of things going on, but just also the music as well, so plug that again. We're releasing a new song on the 11th of February, so watch out for that as well.
I think it will be out when this episode will
yeah just a couple of days before yeah.
So perfect.
Yeah, I think
perfect
February 20th, I believe. So just a couple of days before. So hopefully by the time this episode comes out, that song will already be climbing the charts.
Yes.
I know that Marjolaine and I will be very happy to hear it.
Sure, yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I want to see this film about people who are literally up to their neck in it, because that could either, depending on who's directing that, I know you said you wrote and directed it yourself, depending on who's at the helm of that thing, that could either be, that could be a dark, dramatic film where they're in their final moments, or that could be a Monty Python sketch.
Yes, well, I think it's somewhere in between. You've kind of hit on the nail there. It's sort of there's a lightness to it. It's kind of meant to be funny and witty in its style, but it's also got like a depth and a metaphor for like how we face death and how and sort of that bigger question, which is slightly darker in its substance. So yeah, excited to sort of see get the chance to share it with people, and it's been a really interesting and collaborative process with lots of different creative people. So
now, is that your first film that you're writing and directing?
Yeah, I did a little very short film called Apotheosis a while back, but that wasn't really, that was more experimental, and this is definitely my first kind of writing and directing project. So I spent quite a long time trying to get it right. And I think also with slightly more limited resources, it kind of requires a bit more time and energy just to kind of keep things moving on with it. So yeah. So excited to see it finished.
Yeah.
Well, you cut yourself a very fine topic for your first writing and directing job. That's big.
Yeah, I know. It's I don't sort of tread lightly. I think I was like, I'll either do it fully or not at all. So I thought going for a wacky, slightly experimental concept was the best thing to kind of choose.
That's an excellent philosophy.
Yeah.
Now, if people want to keep up with you and just kind of get an idea of when they can see where you're at and what you're up to, is there any social media platforms or anything that you want to let people know about?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. That's where I mainly post. I'm called Joshua Shea. Shea is spelled S-H-E-A. I'll post things on my YouTube, and you'll probably be able to find me mostly on Instagram.
Perfect.
Keep an eye out.
We certainly will.
Yeah, we will. And yeah, thank you so much for everything that you shared. I think the listener will be really, really excited about everything that you shared with us. I think we kind of, it's always so fun to make interview and to, as fans, maybe have a moment to imagine what was like on set, and having the making of information. That's always so excited. So thank you for that.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure talking to you guys.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure having you. Dare I say, fantastic, even.
Yes.
Couldn't help
thank
myself.
You.
Easy. I always got to get at least one. I always got to get at least one.
Yes.
Can't help myself.
So for every episode, we choose a question for our listeners. So we didn't ask you earlier to prepare a question, but maybe you have a question for our listener that you may think. I have one if you don't. So don't
I don't have anything. What kind of question? Is something Harry Potter related?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's usually related to whatever we talked about on the episode. Like on our most recent episode, we talked about the International Confederation of Wizards and the Statute of Secrecy. And mm-hmm. what we asked our listeners was, do you think the Statute of Secrecy is something that they should still be doing, or do you think it's time that we got rid of it? So we kind of brought it back to our discussion. But in this case, our main discussion was getting to know you.
Yeah, there we go. So maybe the question could be, do you think Leta will come back from the dead? Because that was the question we were asking. Or what do you think about what happened to Newt in his past? And what do you think happened?
Actually, it's pretty close to what I was thinking. The question.
Actually, I like that. We can work with that.
Yeah.
What part of Newt's past we want to see in future films? That could be. Yeah.
What part of Newt do you want to see coming back?
Yes.
From his past. No, it'd be interesting to know what everyone thinks they want to see. And
you can even definitely give Josh full credit for that question. That's an excellent thought.
Perfect.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be more. I'm sure. The crimes of the secrets of Dumbledore will reveal more.
Sure.
No doubt.
Yeah. So, dear listener, you can answer Josh's question, and we love to hear from you. So drop us now on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And you can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We will really, really appreciate that.
And if you want to keep up with us on any of our social media platforms, we can be found on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie. We are on Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. And if you would like to support the show, like our wonderful Patreon supporter Margie, who sponsored today's episode, you can go to patreon.com/speakbeastie, where you can see all of the incredible content that we have been putting up. You can have early access to bonus episodes. We got bloopers that go up for every episode, because those are always hilarious. We've got some things that have been going up not recently. Anne and I recorded a conversation. I don't know how far ahead of this episode that might be up, or if it'll be a while, but we couldn't help noticing in an earlier episode, we talked about how Theseus Scamander is sort of like the Captain America of this squad of people that Newt's got going around with him. So what we did was we took, I think, about 7 or 8 characters from the Avengers, and we figured out which characters from the Fantastic Beasts series were most like those characters.
I can't wait to listen to it. That sounds so
well, funny. Hopefully that'll be out soon around the recording of this episode, because Anne and I, when we got done, even we we try not to pride ourselves too much, but even we were impressed with where that conversation went. We had a great time recording that, and so hopefully people respond to that as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I'm still thinking about what I will do next for the Patreon, but recently I'm tempted to go back to film reviews and to look for films that are connected to what we will see in future films. So maybe a film about Germany in the 30s, or films about these years and rise of fascism. So maybe I will try to find good movies about that and give some reviews to prepare for these dark times.
Oh, that would be a really fun discussion. I'd love that.
Fun, I don't know, but yeah, we see.
Well, fun, I mean, fun in the sense that I can't help it. My grad school brain kicks in every now and then, and I just think, ooh, something fun and academic and analytical, I want to know about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, even like in the Fantastic Beasts films, you know, the parallels to World War, you know, World War II and things. And I'm interested to know whether they'll take that further and the kind of parallels with the Muggle world and what was happening in real life. Yeah. And what's happening in the Wizarding world. Interested to know what they'll do with that.
Yeah,
that's a very excellent point. Yeah,
yeah, that's definitely one of my most, yeah, the thing that I like the most about this movie is the history connection and this, yeah, of course Grindelwald is kind of a, yeah, the wizard Hitler of this world. So we'll see what, yeah, how the comparison will be developed in the future movies. So yeah,
it's interesting how he uses that to kind of warp people's views of Muggles. I think that's really interesting. Very, very clever.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, but if you're a megalomaniac, you do things like that.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. He's very seducive, I think, in his technique. So I want to see more. Thank of you. I'm interested to know what Mads Mikkelsen does as well with
Oh, sure.
Well, yeah, Mads Mikkelsen is I think a bit seductive as well. He's not usually he's not doing like romantic comedies or anything, but he's a very alluring actor.
Mm, yeah, definitely. I've seen some of his stuff and it's great. So really excited to see what he does with it.
Yeah. So yeah.
So that'll bring our episode to a close. Thank you, Josh, so much for joining us today. I'm Jeff.
I'm Marjolaine.
I'm Josh. Case closed.